So welcome on this very warm afternoon to Strange Landscapes with Chris North and Jim Denning. Thank you to the Arts Council for their support to Ledbury Poetry Festival. Now I'll shortly introduce them, even though you probably know them. Jim Denning is a poet with a background in journalism and publishing. His poetry was published in various poetry magazines, and he has three collections out. Pebbles, Debris was published in 2003, and Dealing with the Edge in 2011. And a third one, Le Chemin d'ici, The Roads Round Here, was published just a month ago by Arcade Publishers. He has won a commendation in the National Poetry Competition, as well as other awards. He has lived in France and also writes in French. He is a co-founder of Poxymoron, the satirical absurdist band in Ledbury, which has produced a new CD and has just performed a gig last Friday. Christopher North poetry has won many prizes. I won't list them all. His first pamphlet collection, A Mesh of Wires, was shortlisted for the Forward Prize in 1999. His first full collection, Explaining the Circumstances, was published in 2010, followed by a bilingual joint collection, Al Otro Lado del Aguilar, in 2011, and a second full collection, The Night Surveyor, in 2014, and all of them were published by Oversteps Books. Wolves Recently Cited was a winner in the 2014 Templar Pamphlet and Collection Awards. He facilitates poetry retreats at Almacera Vella in Reyu, Alicante, which he opened with his wife in 2002. He chairs Stanza Alacant for the Poetry Society. And as their old friends, they will share the landscape of the stage and read taking turns. Enjoy the event.
A hot, clear day, cloudless, or almost, as will be seen. A view across the Malvern Hills. The women are having another rest. When we all say, look, a little fleck of white appears above the far horizon against the blue, blue sky. Where nothing was before, another and another fleck of white appear, and they flow and cluster together and make a cloud, a tiny cloud, no bigger than your hand. No, and now the little cloud swims slowly sideways in a convection of the air, breaks up and disappears. While back above the hill, another little fleck is born. We saw this once in Spain. Amid the shimmering arid lands, we thought it took the crucible of the south to start a cloud laboratory. The void is full of elements, condensing sometimes into clouds. I thought of words appearing unexpected, out of thin air where there were none before. If not kept, they scatter to the wind and pop and vanish in oblivion. Well, sublimity evaporates. People lose interest. We all go home for a glass of wine and a chilled and cloudy glass.
Beyond the range of the Tsar's photographer, the Tunguska forest of the meteorite and its flower of blasted pines, beyond the islands of the Gulag and the road of bones through endless forest, where winter is norm, lives pass unrecorded, where epics unfold their progress in silence, towns work through unknown narratives, and all are outside the great conversation. Beneath skyscapes lashed with stars and the unfolding green of Borealis, through Yakutsk to Sakhar and ice-crushed bridges, between frozen mountains lies Omiokan. And here, they say in winter, words freeze as they leave your mouth to fall numbly in the snow. They make a tundra packed with gossip, cries of love, argument and greeting, speeches and shouts petrified in depths of ice. Until One midday, when larch are greening and goldenrod smiles at the low sun, words rise into air as if from a hatch flung open to fill the town like birdsong and running water.
Chilton Diary. Here is the private landscape of desire. Abandoned bodies of the rounded hills, half-seen untraveled depths in distant woods, the velvet entrances, the unknown ends of old green lanes, while curling skylines lie upon the oblivious and alluring fields. This closest field to home, my favourite, begins from near the level of a man and swells to twice the level of the trees, to make us in this morning's morning mist a breathless pale horizon to the west. I go, or in imagination go, to pace its plump imagined middle point, and there the centre mark, to sit if dry, to lie if hot, or in the cold today to touch the presence of the strange domain. Across the slope to where the oak trees grow. Now quickly scramble past the hedgerow, down the narrowing trail between the hazel ones, and pause before the exquisite copse, the moist and scented chamber to the field where shadowed paths arrive and pheasants wait, where ancient earthwork banks lie low and part and let you pass and rest and be content. Then slowly homeward, through the flickering light. The day we walked the Kinder Edge, you know, the Kinder in Derbyshire. We dressed up warm in extra layers and marched through shallow, crunching snow, with your old dog trotting and snuffling nearby and the wind keen in our mouths and eyes. In a semblance of shelter behind a rock we sat, sipping cognac, nibbling cake through gloves and scarves, across stones and peat towards the clouded edge. Our crumbs and words were flung away in the whistling air. The day we walked the Kinder Edge, Nud trudging and shivering in the wind's teeth, was a way of dancing in suspense before each other, breathing in the mountain's eager breath. With streaming eyes we blink and smile, knowing beneath our layers of boots and hats and fur and fleece, we are naked and waiting for each other. And later your breath will flutter on my face. In the borderlands, beside old roads you see them, the ditch and bank of other times, the deer park of an ancient hundred, the tribal boundary, a claim of sovereignty, intended to contain and to exclude. The struggling, sweating men long dead, their sharp defences overgrown, their fallen earthworks fading in the mist, the echoes of their voices all but gone. I had another sheepdog once, see, came a voice along the bar. He ran off on Offa's dyke one day, in a place where rustling aspen grow, so thick you're not sure where you are. I heard him in the bushes growl and bark. The wind was blowing strong and sharp and turning over every silver leaf. Up flew the birds. All you saw of them was rooks far flung around the sky. I heard the bark turn into a whimper, and my old dog come limping back, his leg all bloody and fur clotted. I could tell from looking in his eye he'd seen a thing invisible to me. With the wind increasing all the time, I seemed to hear men's voices shouting and footsteps running and the clash of iron with the aspen lashing all the time. A whirring in the air, a flying branch or something heavy whacked me to the ground. My shoulder took a vicious twinge. I thought it high time to be out of there and back here for a pint and living company. My old dog was always quiet after that. He'd look at me sidelong and anxious-like. Yan, tan, tether, and mether, a pimp. Bah. Tease, a lease, a catter, a horn, a dick. Bah. Yan, dick, tan, dick, tether, dick, mether, dick, bump it. Bah. Yan, a bump it, tan, a bump it, tether, a bump it, mether, a bump it, jiggot. Bah. That was Lancashire sheep counting. Some of you have may noticed that the word for 20 was gigot, which seems to resemble the French for a leg of lamb, un gigot. Turn off the road here. Down the slope to the lower level. It's soft at the bottom. Engage the 4x4. We're in the orchards. The pickers passed last week. Apples they have missed are gleaming on the trees. Slowly we pass the ends of rows, ground shining with windfalls. The two girls are perching in the back of the truck. Hold on tight, I shout, and lie down, low branches coming. Ripe fruit is falling on us. Later, we will pick the golden apples. And before pressing, pulverize them. Only then do they give up their juice in gushes. We move slowly on, past the ruined building, past the old reservoir. The village comes into view. The girls knock on the roof. We stop. They've put bandanas on. They're hauling the gun around, cranking it up, aiming. The truck rocks and shudders, spits and puffs, flicker in the trees. The girls knock on the roof again. We reverse out and head away. In the mirror, I see a woman holding a kind of dart, running fast and catching up. I shout to the girls, throw down one of the golden apples. Throw down one of the golden apples. The woman pauses to pick it up and runs again, faster than before. By God, they were merry when we came into the bar. A circle of enormous blokes lining up pints of Wye Valley and Ludlow Gold. Wearing huge blue T-shirts with Pipsqueak's Bullers or some such legend on the back and drinking as fast as they could laugh. No wonder they were thirsty. They had run or limped or staggered the Bromyard Hopsack race. You can imagine the picture of teams of gasping, shouting, cursing men in fours coming up the high street, past the Hop Pole, past the Bay Horse, past the Falcon and the King's Arms, round the corner by the church, round the back and round again. A hopsack full of hops will weigh the same as a man, but he don't have arms and legs and he don't have handles. What he has are ears. Ears at each corner, you have to hold them somehow and keep running and not let him touch the ground or you lose time and points and honour. In the mind's eye, another image, by God, of four men running up the street, shouting, gasping, carrying a heavy weight between them, holding it by its arms and legs, the brother or the cousin just caught in some trivial backstreet action. The wailing coming off the ruined walls, keeping clear of rubble on the ground, they run for their lives and family honour.
Census. Other items sent in by people included credit cards, checks, a set of deeds, family photographs, a completed driving license application form. Office of National Statistics, April 2011. And some sent small cellophane packets of toenail clippings. There were locks of hair, a train ticket from Paddington, a shirt button, white, and a small plastic tub of collar studs and cufflinks. There were copies of expired contracts, x-rays of persons now deceased, group photographs of weddings, only the photographer's company identified, always a concern long since out of business, and restaurant bills, small pieces of fabric from an heirloom counterpane, a condom wrapper, and an empty box of Three Castles cigarettes, the gold foil still intact. Then there were the poems, and diaries and bundles of letters, even 400 typed pages of a novel that began, "At 4 o'clock it rained, it was always raining. She wanted it to stop, but it continued relentlessly." There were photographs of children out of focus and a box of journals all filled with minute inked handwriting in German. Some were delivered personally with accompanying floral tributes. In one case, by a small man in a Charlie Chaplin costume who performed a little dance, clicked his heels and asked the desk clerk to sign an attendance sheet fixed to a clipboard. There were offers of liaisons in dim hotels near King's Cross, a week in Gomera, an invitation to a Hopi ear candle ceremony, and on one occasion, the conveyance of an entire Midlands country estate, including 3 miles of trout stream. Some offered hope, atonement, apology, prayers to a wide range of deities, and promises of a pilgrimage to Guadalupe, Santiago, Jerusalem. And there were offers of world peace, universal karma, the melodic spread of a benign and loving cosmos, a caring eternity. The day we fetched the stoves, we found Dahlia Robertiana in the rosemary, and at some point a small boy ripped a fart from cupped hands round a grass blade that put me in persistent mind of a man that played a bedstead like a trumpet. We went through the mountains the day we fetched the stoves, one a corner stove, and parked beside a row of houses that became smaller each time we looked. And wind rattled in a palm tree as if it had blown a long and weary distance. On the day we fetched the stoves, one corner, one centre, the mountain a recumbent sow, and Balias in the rosemary like the plumes of a departing army. In the midday restaurant, a family of matching plumpness from grandmother to baby, the latter a toy passed from lap to lap as the pram was mantled, dismantled and remantled on the day we fetched the stoves and stovepipes, and in the shop, a nest of terrapins and 2 stunned budgies amongst the ovens, flues, and lines of stoves, and picture of a hogsback mountain, those Balia flowers like screaming men. The pastry family handled, dandled, then played past the baby, bundled it and unbundled it, as wind fingered through the rattling palm and tiny houses became small as stones the day we fetched the stoves. With its farting grass, the sleeping pig, the trumpet bed, a dandled baby, screaming flowers, struck dumb budgies, and terrapins. To capture Endymion. That bluebell. I would have one like it, exactly like it, to the filigree detail. But in purest glass. Glass, thin as the thinnest petal wall, imbued with dyes steeped deep in its complicated blueness, containing mauves, pinks, and greys, and tipped with the white-yellow powdery splay of minute teeth, each ending a wisp of unseen silica. And the stem, pure in its thrust, its liquid tubular shaft dusted with the finest dust, the whole moving through a somber spectrum of deep greens to brown to blue, the crook angled precise to the millionth. And within this glass buried scents, essences of awakening woodland, tinged with garlics, sea myrrh and honey. Each morning a first act, spraying mist on the delicate surfaces, their curves, pendants, and silences. The water in shining domes on flat green blades of unblemished basil leaves, fresh as the day before the last bud opened. Each morning the same, eternal, unchanging, The glass strong as strongest metals, colours constant as light broken through a prism. And that splay of opening beech leaves, make it glass. And the tree, the whole intricate thicket, make glass. The whole breathing wood, make glass. Index. Beechwood. Anger, aroused by things said within. Blessings, bestowed beneath beechen bough, quoted. Bluebells, quantity of, invasion of Hispanicus considered. Cathedral, rejection as simile for. Constant repetition of phenomena observed. Creak, various types noted in formal exercise. Cutting off lengths of, considered. Disclosure of interest in. Dream sequences, frequency of appearances within. Echo effects when shouting, fear, attempt to quell in. Frisson as experienced late afternoon. Green, illumination in. Grief as a result of departure from. Intuitive line theory in walks through, also refer trail here under. Hum of insects in summer, harmonic qualities of. Volume. Island universe, seen as. Leaning on, suitable trees identified for, insights provoked by. Let's go to the beechwood for a picnic. Incident. Mast, texture beneath feet in late autumn. Millimetre measurements of leaves, seasonal variation of. Nightingales, absence of. Options, considerations affecting. Pride, its occurrence in narratives involving. Puffball fungus, compared to a row of emerging skulls. Quantum mechanics, performance within. Soundscape, from one woodland edge, two adjoining field, three across a dry valley. Sanical, small colony found. Skein of birds flying over, significance of. Spectra of light beneath canopy, daily variations thereof. Sudden closure of discussion in mid-sentence under canopy of. Suppression of welling thoughts, concerning. Tears, blinding, occurrence in. Time considered as stationary in. Trail weaving intricate way through. Unified object seen faintly from a great distance as. Visions of spectral form moving through. White admiral, single sighting of. Change of pace. Before Rod. Dave was lanky. His ears he considered a problem, and his Scottish accent was made up. His och and we not, I can still hear, and I thought it real then. He was taller, tougher in a scrap, but became suddenly estranged from both me and his brother. He became a company director, selling Mary Osmond's dolls. He had a flair for the rifle shot insult, and Steve, whose second wedding party I attended last week, was cut by him one afternoon of boredom, hornbeam trees, and a girl wearing high heels a size too big for her. Steve had an expert tennis served, shaped by hours of practice, but the follow-through volley was usually netted. He was knowledgeable on cars, never my forte, but very much Ben's, who was short, spindly, and clever. He rebuilt an Austin 7 in a Warwickshire garage and named it Gloriana. He taught me a jazz riff on the guitar I can still play, but he vanished into rural ether. Eric said he could never imagine Ben on top of a woman as we paced the Kensington Round Pond between the law of contract and urban sanitation. Eric was that strange thing, engaged, spoke to his fiancée in Welsh. His other pal, Gerald, took out Jan, my initial date for the final year summer ball, the one perpetually recovered by a single photograph. I remember Dawn leaving London. I spoke to him 50 years later. He was the good friend who never became a good friend. He shared a flat with an almost silent youth who did exquisite charcoals of insects, birds and plants, and one evening introduced me to Ravi Shankar. But somehow he was too remote for friendship. In a big room, people work at intricate moving conveyors. They have legs of different lengths, defects in their noses and ears. Their teeth are uneven. Each has a sex life, very much their own. They colour their fantasies in ways not shared. Their beliefs are inexact, would not resist interrogation. Mostly they like the intimacy of others. Flabbiness is their norm. They are pale, but sometimes beautiful when caught in mirrors. They live behind partitions and windows and only go to chill outside air and birdsong to light and inhale their tobacco. This they do with intense concentration. They are occasionally examined, but never with total accuracy. They create micro-machines by the million. The machines are perfect and packaged in foam. When they leave the delivery bay, it is forever. In the backyard, they leave bags of detritus. At night, these are worried by foxes, some split. The big room is never empty.
I have to put my hat on for part two. My hat. What are you doing there? When words become rabbits, they come out of their holes and prick up their ears and nibble the grass and scamper about and ecstatically mate. And go round in gangs and carry a stick and bite at your clothes and spend all your money and drink all your wine and sleep in your bed and rarely, if ever, go back in their holes. The weather has changed overnight. The horizons are dark and obscure. The rabbits are out with their cudgels. They're taking control. To be sure, the rabbits are patrolling their borders. They're protecting their sovereign warren. They're cudgelling unwelcome vermin and imprisoning anything foreign. But the stoats and the weasels are watching in their black uniforms from the wood. They sent compliments down to the rabbits to delude them as predators should. Now the rabbits have sacked all their leaders. The fur is beginning to fly. Some rabbits are more and more worried. They'll end up in a grand rabbit pie. You'd better clap at the end. The next poem is called Lights Out, and it is a tribute to Cavafy's famous poem, Waiting for the Barbarians, which some of you may know. You know, you remember the Roman senators and the emperor all prepared for the barbarians, put on their fine clothes, and then the barbarians didn't come, and what should we do now was the end. The people are gathering in groups on the street. They're waiting to hear the good news from abroad. Their leader is fighting the forces of darkness. demonstrators are sending petitions to Parliament. Ambassadors and bishops have spoken in protest. Their leader is fighting the forces of evil. The people are emptying the shops of provisions, buying pizza and lager to last out the crisis. Their leader is fighting the forces of terror. A report has come in from a distant frontier where an army of God put a town to the sword. But none were our people. No names were reported. A minister speaks with the blazing conviction of people who dare not show doubt or inaction. But the sound is turned down as we heard it before. Intellectuals criticize public hypocrisy, urging anti-imperial and humanist discourse. The government declines to accept their advice. The people are frowning at flickering pictures. A news flash replaces the penalty shootout. Our leader is announcing a new kind of enemy. A power cut strikes. The screens all go black. But the people are fetching their candles and blankets and beer to make love in the welcoming darkness. Journey from Beirut to Damascus. We went to Beirut a few years ago. Near the ruined heart, the long street begins. A curving sword slices the city. This road was the Green Line. Behold a building infected with destruction, a house engraved with 100 bullet holes. Foolish to walk into your front room, wise to crawl on hands and knees. Now grass grows, lizards dwell in fallen architecture. Our friend writes Arabic in my notebook, the crying on the ruins. This is the Arabishi way, he says. Swooping in a Syrian ex-New York City yellow cab, inspecting the landscape for biblical signs. Here are chicanes, a roadblock, militias peering at us. Children of the Hezbollah offering sweet to mark a suicide. We had a tedious time of it with visas at the border. The only conversions on the road were from dollars. Surely we'll all know when we arrive. In the old city, its name borrowed for Damask or Damascene, near the statue of Saladin, a crowd follows a strange figure. A man 9 feet tall. I hope he will preach, but he is sad. In my dictionary, I find the word for stilts in case he is not a giant among men. My neighbor nods and grins. We shake hands. He is offering small green bitter fruit. Politely, I eat one and shake his hand again. In the street called Straight, we make friends not for a few dollars or a coffee pot, but for the long look into the eyes and the strange exchange of dignity. At night, returning to Beirut, sticky after handling objects and touching people, walking in the ruined heart rebuilt of glistening arcades and cafe terraces, the ruins just behind us are left unlit. A minister arrives, men crowd to shake his hand, old militias take to money and authority. This district is known as downtown now. The word is used in Arabic unchanged. Go to the edge. Soon you will see them, the paths waiting for you down there. See how the road from here begins. Soon it hides and disappears upon another level. The road is already what it will become, the beginning, the end, the continuation of all roads. Avance au bord. Dans un instant, tu les verras, les chemins qui t'attendent. Après la descente, regarde le départ de la route d'ici, qui va bientôt se cacher et se perdre sur un autre niveau. Ce qu'elle sera, elle l'est déjà, à la marche et au cœur et en continuation de toutes les routes. You see, you as well are a departure and a continuation. You see the confused tracks around us dropping and rolling, veering away, crossing, starting anew, startling themselves, sometimes reaching a dead end. One or another then peeling off, fleeing to the horizon to join up again in other realms. Look well upon these trails of history, long-time roots of beasts of the night, crouching in the fields of ancient knowledge, following the subtle directions of the earth, tracks lent to man, just now by man, made hard, filled with stones, and by the imprint of our feet and language, laden with new ideas. We don't make new paths. We don't crush new flowers. We put our feet in the tracks of those who went before. Imagine, with eyes half closed, the roads of empire, pillage, faith, abandonment, ordinary work. Of all that has been and will be again, the echoes reach us. And you, you others crowding the roads, who formerly met, talked, embraced, sometimes killed, arise, you ghosts. How is it we see you no more this fine summer's day, like the summer days of yesterday? Perhaps we will see you returning along these same roads on a winter's evening with dusk falling. Yes, we may hear the cries, the muttered words, the dragged heels. We would know you, our ancestors, our kin. And look closely at the faces of the people you meet, the people sitting next to you. Look well in case you see familiar features of 2,000, 1,000 years ago or of this evening. And the voices you hear, your neighbor's voice, his wife's, your own, they are the same voices which echo along the roads since the early time. Regarde bien le visage de ceux que tu croises, de ceux qui sont assis à côté de toi. Est-ce que tu ne vois pas les traits familiers d'il y a 2000, d'il y a 1000 ans, ou de ce soir? Et la voix que tu entends, celle de ton voisin, de ta voisine, ou bien la tienne, c'est la même voix qui retentit le long des chemins depuis la nuit des temps. As for us, tomorrow, and in 1,000 years, people will meet on the roads round here, looking into each other's eyes, and of course they will see us. They will hear us, dust clad with dust. As we have seen those we loved so well, those who have lent us their lives, the dear unknown phantoms who imbue the roads with their whispers. The invisible procession. We used to be avid for many things, for art, music, spirit, divine unfolding in another body, the mind's refinement to fill empty space. We traversed whole lifetimes, looking for beauty here or there. So many years expended some pictures to hang on walls amid the space. We have traversed whole floods halfway across the county. Some people marooned in the deluge, while we piled through it full pelt in a heavy truck. The waters parted and rose up about us in walls until we came to the place we didn't know, but for old reasons we needed to find. All the time below the house the foaming river ran, brown and lumpy with fresh earth and off the fields and the boiling of more water coming on. Upstairs, in a great light room, mysteries hung and lay, material and intent and time rendered into essence, refined against the grain. The women there, with their clear eyes, the idea of Eve waiting in the garden, smiling, the reflection on the persons we are revealed to be. On a mountain in the night, I dreamt that three of us were sitting in a stony place upon the ground before a cavern full of fire. She, my companion, resting on my right, and on the other side, a younger man, unknown and yet familiar. He smiles, and standing straight, strips off his robe and steps naked into the burning cave. We see him slowly moving deeper until he grows bright and vanishes in light. I'm afraid to follow, although I know a life untested remains unproved. Or was it a shadow self detached from me to show the way?
Woodstock piece. I remember the stardust and Yazka's speech, the eiderdown at dawn, the trees on what would normally be any old anonymous horizon, and the yellow towers like the towers beside the Saturn V's. I remember sometimes I feel like a motherless child, and going home with a vegetable marrow on his velveteen shoulder, and see me, feel me, touch me, and the one-toothed chipmunk croaking that we must be in paradise, and the elfin son of the old hobo shouting, "Lot of freaks!" I remember wooden ships and sweet Sir Galahad and Portisan and the drum solo in Soul Sacrifice and the brown country water with the pebbly uncertain mud and the naked youth. What are we fighting for? I remember going up country and the closed freeway. New York freeway's closed, man. And gotta make it higher and give me an F. And the choppers coming in and the particular sound, the electric guitars were getting that timber textured tie-dyed frayed denim marijuana summer. I remember the rain soaking the canopy, flapping like a loose sheet in a gale, and above the mud and final screech tear of star-spangled banners, a wail of music saying much more than words could, and soaring almost into a pure flow of just then and that moment. I remember the slow trek home, the first marvelous crap, the collapsing to sleep and Mum's first cup of tea, and can't wait to tell the guys I was where it was. I made the scene. Half a million strong. I remember, and I wasn't there. I wasn't fucking there. Same theme. Nostalgia concert, Madrid, 2006. She wasn't a girl, no, a woman. She wore autumnal colours, a stole hid her neck. Her hair was careful. So a surprise at the nostalgia concert, Crosby and Nash, Guinevere and 49 Reasons. She'd moved from her seat way back and now was up front, centre aisle, facing the stage, and she danced stiffly, creaking, danced those old, almost forgotten moves. Her eyes were locked onto the deities. The roadies, grey-haired and gutty, moved forward. "No," said Nash, his eyes and Crosby's eyes, old as hills, travelled, weary. "No," he said, "let her dance. I like it when they dance." How many here, own up, have actually read Lawrence Stern's Tristram Shandy all through? One. Well, I read it earlier this year, and this poem is simply a reverie on thoughts that floated into my mind having read that extraordinary book. Reverie after reading Tristram Shandy. Enter at a gallop and hitch your Polestead broomhead to the dado. Plump housemaids kerfuffle in the corridors. The coarse barrel lies outside the scullery door. Tis an habitat for newts with fierce crocodildo teeth. There is a thin whale, a blaring whale, a catastrophe whale, and now running feet back and forth overhead as sweaty gentry below, all moth wings, dust periwigs, and bunions like onions, belch and burble their pipes, tapping out dottle on the regimental firearms. "Good sir," methinks, "and zound, sir, for to consider, indeed take note of embrasures, modillions, condiments, and those remarkable qualities of the gentleman's proboscis, and pray let not a flaming walnut fall in thy breeches, for thy member will be scorched. I make jest, sir, a jest." the dense woods around of turkey oaks, puffballs, beggar breeches, and spikenard will ring bark to bark with quick shouts of needle-pointed agony so acute the very bonds of our brickwork will loosen and crumble. A gaggle of geese waddle athwart the crenellations. Plumed flags flap sinister as an image of the great nose rises ponderously over the hill forts of the northeast. In muddled lanes, a tumble of tumbrils, files and tootles, bric-a-brac littered on a ragged lawn with its clovers, oxeyes and ant-heaps that each contain a folded butterfly. This is a world in a teapot, a port decanter, a colander, a pudding bowl. And see, we have racing ducklings. Build an enclosure wall, enfilade the pointe l'east, ruinate the kettle bins, scrub clean the cobbled dorrets. All is a clatter of cast-off saucepans, spoons and tureens. The stars glow, superglow, fade, then glow again, each secure in its right to be accidentally where 'tis sprinkled. More thuds in the corridor, screams and counter-screams. Light your calabash, my good companions of the scullery. Heave a log on for an esteemed Quintilius who's loser of battles. Let us talk of noses beyond all possibility, for a nose is a nose. I suppose your toes are roses or rose-like. Your manhood perchance will glow, God knows. A hose flops in the marrow patch. From the woodland arises a murmuration that weaves, cross-weaves, then abandons all to leave a dome of sky flushed pink. A friend of mine, an artist in Spain, has a particular penchant for the erotic. This is a poem based on one of his paintings, Four Legs in a Bed. This moment, so resolutely thigh, absolute thighness of thigh, a sigh of thoroughgoing thigh with an echo of bending knee, velvet braided cushions plumped for her royal thighness. This thigh, this buttock, this junction of gentle globes, this bump, this rump, this pump, all in a quiet room with murals of blue lagoon glow and maroons. Gradual now, a jazzier note, genital thrills, and wow, slow plosion, oh, oh, oh! Then flop to boudoir pinks and bows, powders, cream and dusky musk, bods on a softly mattress, this neat bum, this elbow, this dangly foot and phalanges, neat toes and toenails, lollabit, trollabit, mollabit, sigh for a thigh, a belly button, tipple a nipple, lip to the tip, hum for a bum and run a thumbnail down her avalanche of back. Ascension of Isola San Giulio. The basilica of the convent island of San Giulio, near the lakeside town of Orta in northern Italy, is a favourite site for wedding photographs. In the late afternoon, the island loosened moorings and drifted towards the town. The approach was silent and hardly noticed until waters became turbulent and the quays met in a long, grinding kiss. Boardwalks splintered and cracked, but not before the brides and their entourages had disembarked. The convent doors stayed closed. This service rendered, the island moved slowly back as clouds mottled sunlight on the lakeside mountains. All was calm. Townspeople gathered, open-mouthed, and heard from over the water on a gentle breeze, choiring voices from the nuns, a sweet, imploring chant, as, with scarce a shudder, the island began to rise. There was a basal rending of rock, the campanile tolled, and with unwavering force, San Giulio lifted free of the lake, water streaming from the rising banks, where motorboats dangled like tiny pendants, until one by one their painters broke and they fell with other debris. The lake erupted with splashes like a white blossom as the island moved steadily towards the sky, its shadow crossing San Mauricio and the Santuario del Sasso. When it entered the first wisps of cumulus, the stacked clouds above opened outspread arms and the island was engulfed. All became a swirl of vapour. The onlookers stared upwards and at the now visible far shore. There were a few remnant splatters in the vacant water, then just birdsong above and around the weeping brides. Towards clarity. It rains. Or is it in fact rain? Is each drop less than half a millimetre in width? Are there more than 1,000 drops per cubic yard? If so, it's drizzle. And has it stopped? Or is it now rain gradually becoming drizzle? When exactly does it stop? When precisely does it start and become rain? I am here. Reference 982081 on sheet 165. Although that assumes the plan is correct. Anyway, it can't be more accurate than, say, 15 metres either way. That's the size of a pencil point. And that doesn't allow for curves. Everything's curved. It's 5:10. As you've been reading this, it's already become later. And anyway, that's by my watch, which, like every functioning watch, is very rarely correct. If it is, I cannot be certain it is, because in checking against others, I must consider the overwhelming majority of watches that are wrong. And do you love me? Tell me truly. Thank you.
A cold sun glances through the trees, along the frosted track. A fluffed-up robin and his mate, the blackbird, scamper towards their feast of crumbs. What time of renewal is at hand? The seeds have frozen in the cracked earth. What promises, what mendacity have kept the people quiet along their slippery streets? Oh, we will see the season through. With brave spirits and absurd jokes, with our cocked heads and bright eyes. With our mates we will see it through, as if we were all young together and might yet lead flaming lives.
The Night Surveyor, Dartington Gardens, for Ben Oakley. After the farewell party, we grabbed a bottle and, on your suggestion, headed into the labyrinth of dark and leaves. How many came, I do not know. Giggling and without a torch, we found the tilt yard, above us Cassiopeiae and a slumped great bear. "Now be our night surveyor," you said. I declared to the six of us, or were there seven, "The cypress is 20 metres from the 12th apostle. That fountain, 2 chains, 15 feet 11. Starlit dunes of fields gleamed above the trees as we crossed the silvered lawns, and I announced, "We are 400 feet above the sea." I led up endless steps, finding risers with gentle kicks. "There's this place of 7 echoes," someone whispered, and someone counted whispered, "There are only 6. "Full fathom 5, I shouted from the bastion. "No, please, not that one, surveyor," you murmured. "O tree of dark coral made? Try something else. Some bow or brooch or braid or bracelet, latch or catch." No echo, but a leaden voice climbed inside my ear. Over Staverton or Berry Pomeroy's lowly thatch hung Jupiter. No, Venus. Or was it Mars? One shouted, "I am the universal me," voice cracked and small beneath shades and stars. 2 melted into trees, we remaining passed round wine. The town below lolled in sodium as if bathing, and you yawned, "Get us back, surveyor. I think it's time." I counted steps. Shadows rose and fell in bands. feeling for damp and stone, plotting silhouettes and shadows. Gradually, we became a chain of hands. Thank you.